I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
And I'm Susan Wilson. KC Currents is KCUR's weekly magazine show. We use voices, stories, and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region.
Kansas City may be famous for its jazz and barbecue, but it also has the dubious distinction of having had one of the best mafias in the country. This is according to Terrence O'Malley, who's researched the history of organized crime in Kansas City. Several years ago, O'Malley produced a documentary about the subject called Black Hand Straw Man, and he's now come out with a companion book, compiling photos, artifacts, and records. Susan caught up with Terrence O'Malley recently. He explained how it all started in the early 19-teens.
The mafia system in Sicily was a political and economic oppressive system where you had this collusion between those that were in power politically with those that were in power financially. And they set themselves up as clans, thus you get that family concept. And it was an oppressive environment. People could not be entrepreneurs. They were under constant threat of extortion or violence being perpetrated against their family. They were kept as immigrants and they couldn't get good educations. And it was a forlorn situation for many, many Sicilians when they came over to America. And so those people were not criminals. They were really just people who were looking for a new start in a new country. Not only did the good people come over, but the bad guys came over too. And they saw opportunity here in being able to extort from their fellow countrymen, their paisani, who had been making inroads and being successful as grocers and butchers and artisans of various sorts and having businesses. And so they were easy prey, so to speak. And frankly, these were large sums of money they were extorting. They were extorting, you know, up to $5,000 per person. Well, you have to put that into perspective. $5,000 around the turn of the 20th century or, you know, around 1910, 1915, that would be equivalent to, I don't know exactly, but probably $50,000 today, you know. And so what they would do is these members who participated in this precursor to what we view as organized crime, the Black Handers, would meet together in some, you know, back shop, like, you know, the back office of a grocery store, say, and they would drink wine and they would play briscola, which is an Italian card game. And then, you know, as the evening wore on, they would kind of congregate closely together and they'd start talking about names that could become potential subjects for Black Hand extortion. And they would discuss the pros and cons of targeting a particular individual. How strong was this individual? What was his or her ability to pay? What would the family influence be on it? How would we do it? How would we perpetrate the violence if we need to? How's the communication going to work? They really went to great lengths to think these things through before they would actually target somebody. And then out of the blue, one day, as a successful entrepreneur or business person in Kansas City, you would receive this Black Hand letter.
Now, you point to the names D. Giovanni and Ballesteri as kind of founding members of the early mafia.
Yes, absolutely. Those are the names that keep coming up again and again and again. And they persisted well into the 1950s as being those people who, while they remained in the background, nevertheless had a control over mob operations in Kansas City. It's a little unique, Kansas City was in that regard.
Tell me the story, because I found this story interesting. There was a family of grocery store owners that had a rather unique way of being left alone by the Black Hand, the Brancato family.
Yes, and I think that you know, you're pronouncing it correctly, Brancato, Brancato.
Brancato.
Yes, see, but I think that the Americanized, Anglicized version of it today is they pronounce it Brancato.
Brancato.
Yes.
Huh.
Mr. Brancato was a successful grocery store owner in the North End, and was targeted by the Black Hand. And so he was not about to submit to the Black Hand easily. And he actually put up a lighting system around his house and an alarm system. And he hired a black man named Toots to ward off the Black Hand. And Toots has that great quote in there that says, "The only black hands around here are these two black hands of mine." But finally, what they did through insistence of Mrs. Brancato was they were about to have a child baptized, and they asked James Balistrieri to be and Mrs. Balistrieri to be the godparents to that child. And once they did that, then the Black Hand left them alone. And interestingly enough, those people are actually godparents, were godparents to a lot of people in the Italian sector.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yes, right. Got the Black Hand off their backs.
Kansas City's mafia really started gaining power during the Prohibition era, when families joined forces and controlled the city's bootlegging. They were in cahoots with city boss Tom Pendergast and helped Harry Truman's rise to power. The era has been well documented, so let's jump forward a few decades to a couple of the final episodes of the mafia's most important years. Starting in 1957 and continuing through the 70s, the main mafia boss was Nicholas Civella. Civella and his enforcer, Willie Camisano, were two of the central figures in the series of bombings that took place in the mid-70s in the River Market, which was also called the River Key. Terrence O'Malley explains.
David Bonadonna was a made member of Nick Civella's crew. Actually, he was under Camisano, but they all fall under Nick Civella. And David Bonadonna's son, Fred Bonadonna, owned one of the popular night spots down at the River Key. The bar was called Poor Freddy's. Freddy Bonadonna was not a member of the mob, although he had grown up with it because his father was a member of the Kansas City Outfit. That's what it was being called at this time. So the Outfit is being displaced from a number of the sleazy bars and hotels that are along 12th Street so that they can build the Marriott Hotel where it is right now. And so they needed a place to relocate a lot of those joints. And a natural place from the mob's perspective was to go to the River Key. Well, people like Freddy Bonadonna, who were running clean establishments, didn't want go-go dancers being brought in there and didn't want the sinister and pernicious effect that, you know, mob-run joints would have. And another thing is that Freddy Bonadonna had intelligently leased parking lots with the city, and he would charge people for parking, but then they could come into his establishment and turn in a voucher and get a free drink. And so he was able to, you know, capitalize. It was a good marketing strategy on his part. And he was also the president of the River Key Businessmen's Association, or, you know, the business group that ran the Key. So Freddy Bonadonna had a very, you know, large role in the River Key as a businessman. And the mob wanted a cut of the proceeds that he was getting off of the leases from the parking. They wanted to move their bars and their, you know, strip clubs into the River Key. And so they wanted Freddie to back off from opposing them in that regard. And so the Camisano faction lobbied Freddie hard to stop opposing their efforts to move into the River Key, and Freddie opposed those efforts for the most part. And it became evident to the mob that Freddy Bonadonna was a real obstacle and something had to happen here. And so they went to Fred's father, David Bonadonna, who was in the mafia, and said, you know, you need to convince your son that he needs to go along with what we're trying to accomplish. And David Bonadonna tried to talk Fred into it, and Fred said, no, we're not going to allow that. The River Key is meant to be a family-oriented area, and that's the way we want to keep it. And so David Bonadonna goes back to Willie the Rat Camisano and tells him, you know, not only is he not going to do it, but you better not lay a hand on him. And so in the, you know, logic of the mafia, then they've got a problem. And that problem, to resolve it, is to kill David Bonadonna. Why would you kill David Bonadonna when Fred's the one who's putting up the resistance? Well, you kill David Bonadonna because if you kill Fred first, David Bonadonna is a criminal. He knows how to execute people, and he'll come after the Camisanos. He'll come with his guns blaring or his bombs blasting or however he would do it. And so they decide to kill David Bonadonna, the mob does, their own guy. They decide to kill him, and then they're going to go after Freddie. Well, after they killed David Bonadonna, Freddie had some bodyguards, some Peckerwoods, as they were called, non-Italians, and they apparently started retaliating by killing other members of the outfit. And so you had this going back and forth, some murders occurring as a result of all of this, and then establishments being bombed. Freddie Bonadonna's owned a building that got bombed, and Willie Camisano's brother had some buildings that were bombed and destroyed. And so you just had this mafia war going on to the amazement of Kansas City, which was otherwise clueless as to why it was that they were doing this to each other. But that's what happened.
What dealt the death blow to the outfit, as you call it?
Well, really what did it, but also what enriched it greatly, was its penetration into the control of the casinos in Las Vegas. They had a really almost a brilliant business plan to take over Las Vegas. And what they did was they had a gentleman who approached the Teamsters to obtain loans to purchase distressed properties in Las Vegas. And by that, I mean casinos, the Stardust, the Tropicana, and a couple of more. And they put this fellow in as the ostensible head of the casino operations in Las Vegas. He was the straw man. His name was Alan Glick. And so the idea was to build up these casinos, to refurbish them, revamp them, make them better night spots, and then to slowly siphon off money, cash, from the counting rooms in the casinos. And it worked for years. They would take cash from the counting rooms, the casinos, and it would come back to Kansas City, and then it would get divided in Kansas City and go up to Chicago, Cleveland, and Milwaukee.
And it ended up then wiretapping.
Yes, there was a lot of wiretapping went on. But what they were trying to do with these casinos was to basically drive them into bankruptcy so that the union, the Teamsters, would be in a position as the first and primary creditor to take over the actual operations of these casinos. They would own the casinos, and then the mob could go in and run them and steal them blind. And what happened was that there was wiretapping that was going on, and eavesdropping, electronic eavesdropping by the FBI in Kansas City when at the Villa Capri restaurant on Independence Avenue, FBI agents heard Cork Savella and Tuffy DeLuna having a conversation in kind of coded terms where they started talking about a guy named Genius and a guy named Lefty. And all of a sudden they realized, wow, they were talking about Las Vegas. And so the local FBI reached out to the FBI in Vegas and in Chicago and said, you know, do you want to take the lead on this investigation? We really think we're onto something here. And those two offices were so full with their own investigations going on that Kansas City became the lead on the straw man investigation. There was actually a strike force on organized crime, and they were the ones that conducted the investigation into the casino skimming. And that's why in the 1980s, you had two straw man prosecutions in Kansas City where they brought mobsters from all over the country into Kansas City and tried them here under the RICO Act. And that really was what brought down the Kansas City mob, because essentially they shut down their casino operations in Las Vegas. Nick Civella died in 1983, so he wasn't around. And then Cork Civella was in prison, and Tuffy DeLuna went to prison. So, you know, several of the major characters were put in prison. And at that point, there was a void in leadership, and their operations were under such heavy scrutiny that they couldn't keep the cash flow coming in, and it essentially dissipated the mob.
Well, Terrence O'Malley, thank you for being with us on KC Currents.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Terrence Michael O'Malley produced the documentary and companion scrapbook called Black Hand Straw Man, The History of Organized Crime in Kansas City.
Coming up, we have an appointment with the Horn Doctor, a brass instrument specialist who makes custom trumpets and trombones. You're listening to KC Currents.